TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Okay, go!
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take it with triple chop, and we're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim and producer Remus get this show on and off the air like the experts that they are. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website for the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Coming up on this morning's show, we will have a comprehensive Jets Flyers preview. We're going to start that around the 7 o'clock, 7:30 hour. Really, the last 2 hours of the show are going to be completely Jets-centric. At 8:30 this morning, our good friend from the PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, Anthony Sanfilippo, is going to join us, talk about the Flyers, talk about the game that will be upcoming here this afternoon, 12 noon, on this fine station and on TSN Jets for those of you watching on television. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 9 a.m. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 11. Boys, I think really first thing we should do is we should call our colleagues right now and make sure they're all awake and getting ready when they come on air. They gotta make sure they get up a few hours early, get a good exercise in, a good breakfast in, so that they're fit and ready to go when they get here. Right? If we're up, they got to be up.
Yeah, that's what Ezzy did this morning. He had some great exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's start with that, because woke up at 5 a.m. and I texted all of you guys saying, just making sure you're awake, and you're all here, and Ezzy, you're here, so congratulations yet again. You are completely dispelling the myth,
yes,
about your punctuality. Unfortunately, the myth about your dietary habits are becoming more and more accurate by the minute. So, Richie, I'll turn it over to you at this point in time.
So I get a text from Ezzy this morning saying, Richie, can you pick me up? I don't have a car. My car is in St. Boniface. So I say, okay, sure, I can give you a ride.
Worth pointing out that Ezzy lives nowhere near St. Boniface.
He doesn't, and last night he was at this beard contest for Festival de Voyageur because Ezzy's been raising money for the Heart and Stroke Foundation.
Yeah, so we'll give him kudos for that.
Absolutely. So I roll over to Ezzy's house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting out front. Ezzy pops into my car. Say, Ezzy, what happened last night? Where's your car?
Because you were with Ezzy for a period of the night last night.
Ezzy then gets into a story, which I will allow him to tell.
Well, first of all, it is early, and it's early. That's all I have to say. Continue, Richie. We saw, by the way, the beard contest was, excuse me.
You okay?
A lot of fun last night, and Festival.
You still have the beard, I notice.
I still do have the beard, and it's probably not going anywhere for a short period of time, at least, because I've grown quite attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
it's now a UNESCO World Heritage Site, as his beard is. You hear a lot about the boreal forest on the east side of Lake Winnipeg. That's also now, sounds like Ezzy's beard.
You know, as an aside, Drew, you were growing a beard with me for Festival, but we were in the festival category, it was called, where it was kind of fun. I mean, we were just growing the beard for 2 months, but there were some beards yesterday. In, I believe it was called nostalgic category, or kind of it was the diverse category. It was an optional category. There were some beards there, and people were combing them, they were cutting them, styling them. One guy had, no joke, candy wrappers in his beard.
That was you.
No, I'm not joking. It wasn't me, and I think Richie was there for that. But it's turned into a huge event.
He actually had candies in his beard. You ate the candies, and then there was just wrappers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, Richie, I'm going to go back to you here on this one. So, Ezzy gets in the car and tells the following story, please.
Well, yeah, because Ezzy can't tell it because he got off track.
And we would be, we actually wouldn't get to Jets coverage until about 10 a.m. if Ezzy was trying to tell the story right now.
So I say, you know, Ezzy, what time did you get to bed last night? It's like, well, I rolled in at about 1 or 1:30. And then I, you know, being the fact that we'd be on air in 4.5 hours, Ezzy said, then I decided to order some pizza.
Good plan right before bed.
Yeah, well, good plan. Like, yeah. That's what you need before bed is a good large pizza.
Well, so you know what they say? You know what they say?
By one.
Some people say, and by some people I mean smart people, say that you shouldn't eat past 9 o'clock. But what I say is I don't want to go to bed on an empty stomach or just having not eaten any pizza for 3 hours.
So Ezzy orders the pizza, and instead of telling the pizza delivery person to call him when they were there, he decided to allow them to just ring the doorbell. Ezzy, of course, has a roommate. And the doorbell was, somebody rang the doorbell at 1:45 in the morning.
So you're saying the roommate happened to be asleep at 1:45 in the morning.
And he got out of his bed, our friend Hart, and said, Ezzy, what the heck is going on here? Ezzy said, hey man, just ordered some pizza. Hart replies, aren't you on the air in like 4 hours? Ezzy replies, yep. Then takes his pizza, eats half of a large pizza, passes out, goes to bed, and wakes up 3 hours later.
I guess what we should be thankful for before we move on to last night in the NHL is that he didn't wash it down with any bowls of Fruit Loops.
I was thinking about it, but you know
good
what?
Story.
It was a fun night last night, and again, I'm going to continue to prove people wrong that I can't get up early, even though I do it every time we're on the air early. But, you know, I'm here, guys, and Drew, you wouldn't pick me up, so Richie picked me up.
Well, I was picking Remus up and getting everyone coffee, so I think I did pull my weight to some degree.
I'm surprised Remus is here, too.
We're all here.
Yeah, well, when Remus walked out of his door after I picked him up, I thought it was The Walking Dead. You know, I really did. I'm like, oh, that doesn't look healthy.
It's funny, Drew, because Remus was in bed by 10 o'clock, so he should be good, so I don't know.
Last night in the NHL, there was three games, sort of a quiet Friday night, as usual, in the NHL. The first game that we'll touch on briefly had the Pittsburgh Penguins defeating the Florida Panthers by a 3-1 margin. I mean, obviously, you know, the Penguins should beat the Panthers, so that's not newsworthy in and of itself. The newsworthy aspect from that coming out of that game is what sounds like a concussion or a potential concussion to Evgeny Malkin. Was taken hard into the boards or sort of fell into the boards while engaged with Eric Gudbrandsson. It's right here on the television. That's good timing. You can see him hit real hard and his head snap back and left the game, didn't return to the game. Obviously, they're still going to be discussing that and figuring out if it was, in fact, a concussion. But based on that look, it looks like he's going to be, you know, it's hard to tell with the concussion, but I wouldn't be surprised, especially given the ferocity at which his head snapped back, that's the telltale sign to me.
That was the key, Drew. The key was his head snapping back when he hit the boards. If you're the Penguins, first of all, your player's health is of utmost importance. I think it's even more important when you're a team that is really good, looking for a long playoff run, and a team who is looking for a lot more years out of Evgeny Malkin. That's not to say that any other team would rush a player back, but I think that they will be extra cautious because it's Malkin and the situation.
Yeah, and it's a scary thing, guys. And Pittsburgh got the win after they had that roller coaster loss to the Philadelphia Flyers, if you remember, Thursday night. But that's a scary situation. He's completely off balance, and you know, Drew mentioned it, and Richie, you also touched on it. When your head snaps back like that, and you're off balance, and And the thing is, you're not able to brace yourself.
Right.
You know it's coming, but you're not really properly able to brace yourself. And we don't know right now what the severity of the injury is. But we know that with certain hits, and especially if you have a history of concussions like a Hossa, Malkin doesn't have a history of concussions. But when there's a situation where your head snaps back like that, it's scary. And you know, we have to just hope that he's not out for that long. Right now, I don't think that we have any update from last night.
But we don't as of yet. If something happens sometime between now and 9 a.m., which probably won't happen because everybody else is asleep, then we'll probably be, Hustler and Lawless will bring you the update, or we'll bring you the update on the midweek show or via our Twitter page. But you're right, absolutely. The head snapping back is an issue of concern for the Pittsburgh Penguins. The other game last night, another game that saw some history being made, and congratulations to the Chicago Blackhawks. They won 2-1 last night, and they became, they now set the record for the longest unbeaten streak to start the season in the history of the NHL. They have a point in their first 17 games, breaking the record that had been set by the 06-07 Anaheim Ducks.
They might miss the playoffs, though.
Yeah, I know.
You know what happened to the 06-07 Anaheim Ducks?
They won the cup.
That's right.
You know what? The Blackhawks drew, obviously, they looked really good right now, and kind of a back-and-forth, pretty quick game yesterday with the Sharks. Sharks have kind of fallen off the map. Patrick Kane is, you know, we spoke to Jesse Rogers a couple weeks ago on this show, but was Patrick Kane taking the next step? And you know, if you read into Joel Quenneville's comments after the game, I think he seems to be convinced that he has. And Kane still looks good, and he's doing other things, and the team's finding ways to win, whether it's being able to score, keeping the score, you know, lower. What do you say? You tip your hat and say kudos to them, and right now they look like the best team in the NHL.
It's incredible. What, you know, Drew mentioned the 06-07 Anaheim Ducks. The other team that started off the season, you know, that well was the mid-'80s Oilers. And, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks, you can't even compare them to the 07 Ducks, and it's clearly too early. But I think also one of the keys, guys, is they're getting goaltending, good goaltending, Richie,
yeah,
from both Corey Crawford and Ray Emery. I mean, both those guys are undefeated right now. Ray Emery, you know, say what you want about him, dating back to his days as an Ottawa Senator, but he didn't have a good year last year. Corey Crawford got the majority of the starts this year, and he's giving them capable goaltending. When you think of, you know, the best 1-2 goalie tandems in the NHL, Corey Crawford and Ray Emery were at the bottom of that list. But this year they're giving them very good goaltending, and it looks like a team that is just a well-oiled machine for the playoffs right now.
Well, I guess the question, though, is, and obviously, as you mentioned, Emery and Crawford have both played very well. I don't know if it changes my expectation or yours or anybody else's about what they can do in the playoffs with those goaltenders.
Right.
You know, obviously you're picking one, first of all, so the strength of having a backup generally doesn't really give you that much of an advantage as it does over a season, especially a long one, which this one isn't, but it's more compact. So, I mean, am I convinced that Crawford and Emery can do the job? You know, show me in the playoffs.
It's a reasonable policy to have. The last game last night took place in Nashville. The Vancouver Canucks defeated the Nashville Predators 1-0. Dale Weiss gets the goal at the 9:14 mark of the third period. That's the only scoring. Canucks 1, Predators 0. Two teams that are certainly they're third and fourth in the Western Conference right now. Two very talented teams playing a low-scoring defensive game. Roberto Luongo with the shutout for the Canucks.
You know, the Canucks right now are playing really good hockey, and the Predators have really surprised me. The Predators have so many problems scoring, and Shea Weber has really struggled, not so much defensively, but offensively, to give them anything there. And, you know, the Vancouver Canucks right now, Ryan Kessler's healthy. You've got two hot goaltenders going, and you watch them, and again, they're still led by the Sedins, and they've got balanced scoring. They've probably got up there as far as the best top six D in the NHL. They're able to roll three defense pairings and give them equal ice time, and they're very talented. And again, you know, you look at the two teams that are going here in the Western Conference, Vancouver Canucks, Chicago Blackhawks, might have a repeat Western Conference Finals here, but another win. And when you know when you don't bring your best game, because last night was a pretty boring game, obviously, with only one goal, but when you're still not playing your best game and you're still winning, you know, you're doing something right.
Their strength, as you mentioned, Ezzy, and we've talked about it, is their defense and goaltending. Not that their forwards aren't good, but that defense, 1-6, is great. And they have two number one netminders. So your depth is on the back end, and they are really demonstrating right now that they can win playing different ways and relying on different... When you have so many strengths, you can win a game defensively, you can win a game with your goalie, you can win a game with your forwards. And they're showing you they can beat you different ways. Those are the most dangerous teams as far as I'm concerned.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website, where I'm sure very shortly the Winnipeg Jets morning papers will be posted, is www.illegalcurve.com.
NHL News and Notes.
NHL News and Notes for a Saturday morning. I want to start with the Taylor Hall suspension for his hit on Cal Clutterbuck. Gets a 2-game suspension. Well, first of all, did you agree with the length of the suspension, and did you think that it was a dirty hit by Taylor Hall?
I did agree with the suspension. I did agree with the length of the suspension, and I did agree that it was a dirty hit, Drew. You know, he was frustrated at the end of that game. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Down 3-1, a couple minutes left. A couple of things to me that really cemented it. And one is that Clutterbuck saw him,
yeah,
to me, at least on my view of it. He saw him and didn't think that he was going to do anything. Clutterbuck didn't have possession. But Hall goes low, I don't know why, and sticks his knee out a bit, but just the idea of going low on that play when you have a chance to hit him square with your shoulder doesn't sit well with me. Clutterbuck isn't a guy who would dive at all. Like, that was a, you know, that was an authentic reaction to what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about that sat well at all, and you need to get that out of the game. And Taylor Hall, I mean, with Edmonton, from Edmonton's perspective, Taylor Hall's a reckless player, and that serves him well, and that sometimes can be his Achilles heel.
Well, and those hits, really, since Brian Marchment retired,
yeah,
have more or less been removed from the game. You just don't see very many low bridge hits anymore. I mean, I guess the most famous one was the one last year in that was that Boston Vancouver Saturday afternoon Stanley Cup rematch, where I can't even remember who went low on who, but it caused a whole brouhaha in that game.
Marchand.
Yeah, it was Marchand on somebody. I can't remember who it was, who went low on. But you don't see very many open ice, low bridge hits like that. I just thought, I mean, I saw the replay of it, and I just didn't know that. I don't know how any Oiler could have, I know they try and stand up for their teammate, but in their heart of hearts, the puck was nowhere near him. There was just, he just tried to take out a guy's knee.
Well, Drew, you mentioned,
and one more point. You try and take out a guy's knee, you could be trying to ruin his career. I think 2 games is even a little light there.
I think he did get off fairly lightly. And you think of last year, I don't know if you guys remember this, but the L.A. Phoenix series, Dustin Brown, towards the end of the series, just remember Shane Doan went nuts on Dustin Brown right before they were knocked out. And that was in overtime, if I'm not mistaken. And Dustin Brown went knee on knee, and I forget who it was on Phoenix. I almost want to say Keith Yandel. We'll have to look that up, but it was on Phoenix. But he might have got off lightly, Richie. I mean, Taylor Hall, not an overly physical player, but he's a guy that will throw the body around, and he's obviously had injury problems. But if you look at it again and again, which, in the day of social media and the internet, we're able to analyze these things over and over again. And, you watch it first, and you it's clearly knee on knee, and he doesn't have the puck. But you watch it again and again, and you can see that he clearly lines him up in that situation. And it's funny, if you've played hockey and that situation happens, you put yourself in almost as much danger to injure yourself when you do that.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's funny, when you think about what his intentions were, you never know if he was thinking that far in advance, and it can be reactionary. But when you consider that he was trying to line him up, and to be honest with you, in a situation like that, he's also reacting to not having a good body check.
Well, I think he could have body checked him cleanly, though. That's the weird part. He went low for whatever reason. I think a lot of it's frustration. The Oilers aren't performing as well as they can, and Hall's been good this year, production-wise. Just said, they've had trouble at 5-on-5. They're losing to a Minnesota team that's in their division. The game's basically over. He's frustrated. That's what he does. You have to make him accountable for his actions, because if you don't, then he does it again.
You're right. And you said that he could have hit him. You're right. If he wants to really lay him out or hit him, he can hit him shoulder into chest right there. The hit is there for him. If he's going to take a penalty, you can go shoulder the chest and you take your penalty and you get your frustrations out, but we're really not talking about this today.
And Drew, I think Brendan Shanahan, you know, sorry to cut you off. Yeah. I think Brendan Shanahan and the Department of Player Safety is setting a good example here. After Yannick Hansen, we talked about this on Wednesday's midweek show with Yannick Hansen's punch to the back of the head of Hossa. Yeah, I think he is setting a good example here. I don't think, you give something like this five games, but two games, it is going to affect him. Is it on the low end? Maybe. But I don't think you were going to give him more than three games. If something like this, five games, that's unheard of. I don't think anybody, was calling for that. But I think it is a good example. It doesn't have a prior history, which they do factor in after they determine if there was intent to injure or it was a dirty play. So, I think they're doing it right so far with some of these suspensions. With the stuff, the scary stuff that happened this week, Drew. I know we'll get into it later. I think that to me is probably a bigger concern. Than these knees and punches. I think for the most part, we have been getting hits to the head. We've been reducing hits to the head, and that's still the major thing. You want to reduce the head injuries.
Moving along, the New York Islanders have put Rick DiPietro on waivers, which is amazing. He's under contract for another 25 years to the team. he's actually under contract for another 8 years to the team. They've put him on waivers to the purpose is to send him down to the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, their AHL affiliate. They can also try and buy him out in the summer. Question, really, that I have for you guys is, is it a prudent move for the Islanders to buy out the remaining of Rick DiPietro's contract?
Well,
and I'll tell you exactly in a second what the buyout's going to cost them.
You know, Drew, I think it is. He's always injured. You can get a good goalie to come around. They're not as difficult to find as some may think. And you're moving into the new building in a year and a half. You kind of want to change the outlook of the squad. This is a little bit of that. That's a factor here as well. You know, what's the perception? Is perception still you have this Mike Milbury stench on the organization? And whether or not Charles Wong is doing a job and doing weird things, you're hopeful, if you're an Islanders fan, that the move to Brooklyn will lead to more success and more appeal, and they'll put the old reputation, not the 80s, obviously, that was successful, but really since then, behind them. And you're spending some money now. You have the ability to buy out players. I think personally that it's a move that if the ownership's willing to put out the money, then I think it's the right play.
Right now he's got 8 years left on his contract, and 8 years and $36 million left on his contract.
Which isn't that much, $36 million. For DiPietro it is, but I'm talking about for an 8-year term.
Right.
So not that much.
Cap hit right now is $4.5 million a year for the remainder of the contract. For the 8 years.
Yeah.
Now the buyout would be two-thirds of the remaining value. So spread over twice the length of time. So the buyout would be $24 million mm-hmm. spread out over 16 years. So they'd have to pay him $1.5 million for the next 16 years to buy out the contract.
Not bad.
Well, what's worse? $1.5 million over the next 16 years or $36 million over the next 8 years?
Well, you make the determination first off if he's going to be part of your goaltending plan going forward, and with his injury problems and the way he's played so far this year, Richie, it's not very well. And if your determination is that you're not going to use him either as a number one goalie, which I would say is not the plan right now for the Islanders, or as a number two goalie, then you do it. Forget the cap hit and all that. I agree with you, Drew. $1.5 million over 16 years to me is mind-boggling. But if it's going to be less than keeping a guy in and out of your lineup, let's be honest, Rick DiPietro in Long Island has been an absolute disaster. The guy has a lot of talent, but he hasn't stayed healthy. And that's what they're doing, trying to see if anybody wants to take a chance on him, which nobody is right now. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that's coming shortly, a buyout that is.
Last topic on news and notes, Erik Karlsson spoke to the media in Ottawa for the first time since having his Achilles tendon sliced by Matt Cook. The following are his quotes, and they're very they're bizarre in that they're contradictory from one sentence to the next. He knows exactly what he's doing out there, Karlsson said, in regards to Matt Cook, and that's why I'm sitting here in a cast. Yet, when asked if Karlsson thought Cook's actions were intentional, Carlson responded and said, "I don't think he did it on purpose. He meant to hit me hard and knock me out. I don't think his intention was to cut me with his skate. I refuse to believe that anyone would do it." But the first quote seems to indicate that Carlson thinks it's deliberate.
Read the first quote again.
"He knows exactly what he's doing out there," Carlson said, "and that's why I'm sitting here in a cast."
Yeah, there's obviously contradictory. I think, personally, that Carlson thinks it was intentional. At least the intent to injure him in some way was intentional. And, you know, he's entitled to that opinion, Drew. Again, I don't think it was intentional, but Matt Cook gets absolutely no benefit of the doubt, as far as I'm concerned, especially among his peers. So, you know, Carlson's emotional and saying what, and he's speaking from the heart there a bit, but... And if you're Carlson, you probably would do the same.
And Richie, keep in mind too, this just happened not a long time ago, and he's sitting there knowing his season is over, the way he's playing, coming off the Norris win, he's playing great, and he's having nightmares about that right now. When you're sitting there and your Achilles tendon is torn, and you have all this time to replay it in your mind. It's funny, we as hockey fans and analysts, we get to watch these highlights again and again. But these guys also, they watch their own highlights and they visualize after games what happens. And you know what? Now that, even though the comments are contradictory, Drew, mm-hmm. he is speaking from the heart. And you know, to be honest with you, it's nice to see him be honest about it, and say what everyone else is thinking. And what everyone is thinking is, even if Matt Cook didn't intend to do it, you kind of think about it a little bit differently when it's Matt Cook with his suspension history.
Well said, Ezzy. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I think the coffee is slowly beginning to hit us. Right, guys? Getting a little bit of boost of energy there?
A little bit.
Flowing.
Still 6:30 in the morning, but...
and Ezzy's still filled with half of an entire pizza from last night, so, you know, Richie's just shaking his head in absolute disbelief at this point, Richie. Isn't it just par for the course?
Yeah, I guess so, Drew. That's true.
That's the problem with it. On Wednesday, the Buffalo Sabres dismissed Lindy Ruff from his position as the head coach of that team. The question I have for you gentlemen is, what other NHL coaches, in your estimation, are potentially on the hot seat, as it were, or the chopping block, if the hot seat has even gotten too hot for them?
Richie, one guy that immediately comes to mind, it's tough to do this with all the injuries, is Joe Sacco. And I know a lot of people have talked about that tandem.
Joe Sacco being the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche.
That's right. And a lot of people have talked about the tandem of Greg Sherman and Joe Sacco being on the hot seat for the moves that they've made. And in this shortened season, it's extremely difficult to make this evaluation. And that's why, you know, when Lindy Ruff was let go, I was a little bit surprised, because, I still think that the Buffalo Sabres can turn it around, even though it's taking them a lot longer than I thought. But with what the Colorado Avalanche have done, or if you want to look at it like failed to do, I would say that Joe Sacco is a guy right now that's, you know, in his fourth year with Greg Sherman and hasn't got a lot out of that team. And there's some talent there. Paul Stastny, Landeskog has a concussion, but, you know.
He's back now.
They said he's going to come back. I'd have to say a guy like him is probably, for me, one of the guys that I'm looking at is a guy that's on the hot seat if they don't turn it around, because a young group like that, they're on the way up. But, again, do they give him a bit of a pass because of the injury problems?
They haven't re-signed Ryan O'Reilly. There's not a ton going for them in Colorado over there.
No.
Rich, let me flip this question a little bit on its head there, Richie, for you, and you can also tell me what head coaches you think are on the hot seat. But, you know, in this shortened season, do you expect that any head coach that gets fired and an interim coach, you know, is hired, do you expect that that interim coach to have enough time to turn a team around? Like, do you expect the Buffalo Sabres to have a stunning turnaround at this point, or is this almost a lost season for a team that would fire its coach at this point?
I wouldn't say it's a lost season, Drew. You know, one hot streak and you never know. But it's tougher, because another thing to take into account, Drew, is the fact that there is less practice time. So how do you install a new system and instill a certain attitude into a team when you have very little time with them? So that would be my concern. the Sabres, obviously, with Rolston, they're going to take a shot there. But they're 6-11-1. So to your point, Drew, it's going to be a difficult hole to climb out of. Having said that, I mean, you're the Winnipeg Jets. You're 2 points back of the Winnipeg Jets. And granted, the Jets are in a weaker division. But, I mean, Philadelphia...
Jets also have two games in hand.
Yeah, but, you know.
I know.
Back to the Colorado issue.
Yeah.
Joe Sacco's really dealt with, to me, very little talent there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, tell me when he's had a real, you know, a bona fide number one netminder and anything that close to a good defense.
They paid for a bona fide NHL number one netminder. They overpaid for one, but, I mean, I don't think any of us are overly smitten with Semyon Varlamov.
And look at their defense. And it's kind of a hodgepodge. And offensively, you know, if they're healthy with Landeskog and with O'Reilly signed and Stasny and Downey back and guys like that, okay, yeah, you have some pieces. But Greg Sherman hasn't given him a deck to play with, a full deck to play with. So for Joe Sacco to be fired, to me, is, and he'd be fired likely by Greg Sherman, to me that would be a bit of an injustice. Now, if they both get fired, then fine. Colorado would
could
start,
be a package deal.
We'll start over.
Sort of Scott Housen firing Scott Arneil last year in Columbus.
Similar. Exactly right. Give him a full squad to work with and let him succeed or fail, then decide. Because remember when Joe Sacco came around a couple of years ago, he really didn't have much and did a nice job. This team hasn't progressed as they should. Maybe that's because they trade first-round picks for Semyon Varlamov. Maybe that's because of some other issues, but the base is there to have some good success. O'Reilly, Duchene, you know, I didn't mention Duchene earlier. There's some nice offensive pieces there.
Mm-hmm.
But give him a defense. Give him some other players here to work with. Okay. And then be the judge. People are too quick to pull the trigger on coaches.
Well, okay. I don't necessarily... I agree with your point about you know, what has the guy been given to work with. And then how do you... You know, it was like with... I believe it was Mike Yao in Minnesota a couple years ago. Where I can't, the general manager's name is escaping me at the moment.
Chuck Fletcher?
Chuck Fletcher. When Chuck Fletcher said, I expect this team to make the playoffs, and then they didn't, and they fired Mike Yao.
And they fired Richards.
Pardon me, they fired Richards. Exactly right. They fired Richards. And we all said, well, you didn't give the guy anything to work with. What do you expect?
Very true. And I don't like that, because that's the general manager, to me, putting an undue amount of pressure on the coach.
Yeah.
When in reality, the general manager hasn't done the job, or his predecessor hadn't done the job, to put that team in a position to succeed. So it's a little bit of a package deal. Now, the truth is that Sherman did select Sacco. So if Sherman does fire Sacco, it's an admission by Sherman
yep.
that he made a mistake, and also a bit of a, I'm trying to save myself here, I think. So let's, I mean, he hasn't done it yet, and there's rumors. I mean, Darren Dreger this week mentioned a rumor that, you know, Tom Rennie's name would be bandied about to coach Detroit.
Like they're getting rid of Mike Babcock.
I mean, I don't think that is a chance that's going to happen.
Well, I think if you took a poll of most general managers in the NHL, and if you took a poll of us in this room, and our opinion doesn't matter, but if you took a poll of most general managers in the NHL, would Mike Babcock slip out of the top three in terms of head coaches?
No. I mean, we talk about Lindy Ruff, Drew, and he was fired earlier this week. There's no reason to believe, guys, that the Canadian head coaching staff isn't going to be Mike Babcock, Ken Hitchcock, Lindy Ruff. Those are the three, arguably the top three coaches in who Hockey Canada goes with. But, you know, we have to qualify, you know what we're saying here and what I was saying earlier about Joe Sacco. I'm not saying that I don't think he's a good coach. And Richie makes a good point about, you know, the problems they've had at key positions, really, and goaltending and defense being the major ones. But I do think that when I look at, you know, teams that aren't performing well, it's for the purposes of discussion. That's who I see as being on the hot seat. I'm not saying that I don't think he's a good coach. I think that he has gotten good things. Look at Ryan O'Reilly. He got a lot out of him last year, a guy that turned around, didn't turn around his career, but had his best year last year. You know, you mentioned Mike Yao, and the Minnesota Wild are struggling, not scoring as much as they should. You know, to the point of head coaches, and you know, sure, you don't want to turn around a guy too quickly, but you know, at the end of the day, it is about results. And you know, Darcy Regier, you think he wants to fire Lindy Ruff? Absolutely not. But you know, the time after almost 16 years, it happens. And you know, if Colorado, at the very least, if Colorado doesn't turn it around next year, You know, you got to make those tough decisions, right?
Let me ask you this question about Lindy Ruff. I believe it was in 02, shortly before the Winter Olympics in 02, Ken Hitchcock got fired out of Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. And he was then able to work really sort of full-time for Team Canada, scouting and preparing for the Winter Olympics.
Yep.
Would Team Canada and the Brain Trust, you know, be wise to sort of almost hire Lindy Ruff at this point in time to go do something similar to get a leg up on the... Yep. On the competition in ahead of Sochi next year? Lindy Ruff can take a job. I mean, he can take a job whenever he wants, but from now until, say, this summer when you would expect him to be hired by a team, should he be working for Team Canada in some sort of advisory role ahead of the Sochi Olympics?
Absolutely. If he's not involved with any other team in any capacity, I think so. It really does give them a leg up. I think you just touched on it. And I would expect him to be back as a 2014 coach unless they decide to go in a bit of a different direction. But with Steve Yzerman and Mike Babcock already there, and with Ken Hitchcock entrenched in there, I don't see anything changing. Sure, it gives him a chance to do some advanced scouting on other teams and more importantly on guys, the decisions that have to be made on their own team. That's the decisions that are coming up. That's what they're going to be focused on. So absolutely. And you know, Lindy Ruff has an absolutely incredible reputation. So it's not like he's going to be sitting around and people are going to forget about him.
You'd be stupid to not use the resources available. I mean, a coach with experience with Team Canada, the World Championships, and the Olympics, and with such a great knowledge of the league being around so long. Why would you not utilize that asset while he is, you know, exactly as you mentioned with Hitchcock before, while he's sitting there, you know, he doesn't have much to do. You can get him scouting certain players, working on those strengths, piecing out situations of where you could use other players, meaning, you know, what would this guy be like in a penalty kill situation with this much time left? What would this guy be like if we need to win a face-off? What would this guy be like? And he would know that anyways, but you could also have him strictly follow those players and scout a bunch of games in the Buffalo-Toronto area. To me, it seems like a no-brainer.
We're in agreement in that case. Rare is the day when that occurs. Let's go to break. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. The Jets and the Flyers gets underway at 12 noon from Philadelphia. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Shortly after, quarter to the top of the hour.
Drew, what did you just say?
It's early for me, too. I can't, you know.
True or false, we've been on the radio for 50 minutes, and it's not even 7 in the morning. True.
I'm shocked you could do the math, but well done.
I think you're shocked that I'm speaking semi-coherently right now. Or ever.
Semi would be generous.
Yeah. Semi.
Quasi.
Sure. Any of those. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. We're with you until 9 a.m. Hustler and Lawless from 9 to 11, 11 to 12. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show. And then Brian Munns has the play-by-play call, I believe, with Shane Knighty for today's Jets-Flyers game. And I guess Dennis Bayak's working with Mike Johnson, I think, for the TSN Jets broadcast.
That's who was on Thursday.
Right, so I'm assuming that just we'll carry over from there.
Confirm that later, maybe.
Yeah, we can confirm that later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good confirming. Anyways, the WHL is rumored, according to various reports and a number of different media in the city of Winnipeg this week, there's talks that the WHL and True North Sports and Entertainment are in discussion about bringing a franchise to Winnipeg. By the sounds of it, it wouldn't be an expansion franchise, but they would be buying a franchise from one of the struggling WHL markets. The Kootenay Ice is the market that is being named most often out of Kootenay, British Columbia.
Yep. Here's some rumblings about other ones, too.
Yes, there are other ones. It's Kootenay, the Lethbridge Hurricanes, yeah. Prince George, yeah. And I believe Swift Current is the are the ones that are most frequently mentioned. You know, obviously we don't have any specific details right now regarding this, but to me and to my impression is, generally speaking, when there's this much smoke, there's probably a little bit of fire to the whole thing. Do you think the WHL would work finally in Winnipeg after the first two or three incarnations of the WHL years ago, mind you, just did not take did not work in Winnipeg.
I don't see why not, Drew. I mean, it's a cheap... What they try and do is they fill the building more. So the MTS Center will probably be used to just about every day now.
Mm-hmm.
A WHL team is not expensive as compared to an NHL team. You're paying these players small amounts of money bi-weekly. Your overhead isn't too high. You already have the arena ready to go. So you're not buying an arena. You're not building something. It's very low overhead. You're going to price tickets at a more reasonable level to allow some people who can't afford to go to the Jets games and kids and such to be able to go to the WHL games. And you probably, you know, like for certain concerts, they'll put the curtains up top and it'll be the lower bowl, and they'll kind of change the atmosphere that way. I think it's a moneymaker. Well, I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's probably the number one reason they're interested. And then obviously a byproduct of that is a more reasonably priced product for people who have been outpriced by the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and you know, obviously there's one team in Manitoba right now, the Brandon Wheat Kings, but if you remember, guys, dating back to the Winnipeg Arena days, this is before the Manitoba Moose, you know, days. The Brandon Wheat Kings would play in the Winnipeg Arena. The Brandon Wheat Kings have played at the MTS Center before. True North is, you know, has a good relationship, you know, with the Brandon Wheat Kings and bringing that in. But, you know, one of the reasons why I you know, wanted to talk about it on A Legal Curve, you know, is that this news came a little bit out of left field earlier this week in the media that, you know, True North might be. We should stress that it's not confirmed that we know that they're going after a certain...
Just reports,
right? But this is not something that is coming out of left field as far as an idea, because when the Jets 2.0 came back, we were talking about, okay, well, you know, WHL, is it possible we might get a WHL team? And now it looks like, you know, the discussion is heating up. But, you know, I grew up loving junior hockey. I love junior hockey. I love the WHL. And to me, you know, the appetite for the WHL is definitely there, guys. As far as how many tickets are they going to need to sell and all that, well, True North will worry about that. But, you know, I think for it to be successful, you're looking at trying to average 5,000 or 6,000 fans. And you know, I think they could probably do that. Richie mentioned it'll be the lower bowl. They're not going to sell out 15,000 for WHL games. But I think there is an appetite. You know, when Richie and I were coaching a couple of years ago, we took our kids to the World Under 17 Hockey Challenge, and you know that was absolutely packed. And you're talking about Seth Jones playing for the Portland mm-hmm. Winterhawks. You know, you're talking about Brendan Leipzig, who plays for the Portland Winterhawks. He's at the top of the scoring leaders. You're talking about player after player, Shea Weber, whoever you want to say. It's one of the best junior leagues. You know, you could argue the OHL is probably the best or whatever, Richie. The point being that the quality of hockey is excellent. And, you know, I think that, you know, just quickly, I think that it is a no-brainer in the sense that it's a moneymaker, but it's also good for hockey fans. And, you know, not everybody is gonna embrace it and they're going to say, oh, you know what, I'm not really into the WHL. But you know what, if you haven't given it a chance, it really is a high, high quality of hockey. And you're going to see a lot of guys make it to the NHL. Not all of them, but a good percentage of those guys will get drafted and go to the NHL.
The key to me is, A, they make money. And I think B is they already have test projects in Edmonton and Calgary who've demonstrated that you can succeed at having these tenants or owning these teams, having them play and keeping your building busy.
Yep.
And if these teams, and obviously you would be foolish to assume that Mark Chipman and company have not been in contact with the Calgary and Edmonton ownerships to see exactly how much money can be made, how successful how successful they have been. And when you have all of that information, you're making an extremely informed decision, and what you're doing is you're limiting your risk.
Well, Richie, you mentioned the you know, Calgary Hitmen, Edmonton Oil Kings, Vancouver Giants, but also you've got Toronto, you've got Ottawa 67s. Even though those franchises aren't as closely linked, but if you're talking about that, then you've got synergies between the two teams, and it's not a feeder system or a developmental system in that you're going to have a relationship with the Ice Caps, but you're going to have the opportunity to link the two teams and use the brand and all that. And, you know, I think you're right, Richie. For them, True North, it's that's the most important thing. But, you know, it's really a good thing for fans. I mean, you talk about it's tough to get a Jets ticket, and it's not just about that. I mean, I think standalone junior hockey, I've always thought this, and you know junior hockey does well in these markets, but I've always kind of thought that, you know, there is an appetite. Just forget the business thing, you know, alone. You know, people, there is an appetite for junior hockey just by itself. You think of like how popular the World Junior Tournament is, just on its own, and there are people that are really into following prospects, for example.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. As
the World Junior Tournament, to my perspective, is only popular because they're wearing the Canadian flag on their jersey.
I mean, do they have a core and a certain hardcore following? Yeah, I think what you mentioned, though, and I wanted to discuss quickly before the break, is the effect on Brandon. And, you know, the Brandon Weekings have been playing in Winnipeg the past few years because of the Brandon...
the Royal Winter Fair.
The Royal Winter Fair. And first round, I've been to the games, has been played in Winnipeg.
And that's been for a number of years now.
Yeah, but, you know, there were articles just when the Jets came back that Brandon had taken a little bit of a hit in terms of attendance and profit because of the Jets' return. The question then you have to ask is, how affected will Brandon be by Winnipeg having a WHL team? Or will there be a positive effect? I mean,
well, if you read the quotes from Kelly McCrimmon, I have them right here. This is from Kelly McCrimmon. From a Brandon standpoint, he says it would provide us with a natural rival. We don't have a natural rival. Everything in Brandon is about day of the week, so we can play Friday or Saturday. It doesn't matter who we play necessarily because we don't have any rival that is better or worse than any other. So that would be positive in the sense of getting their natural rival. You know, he goes on to say that when asked, would teams complain about having to travel 2 hours further east? Winnipeg would be the most eastern outpost in the WHL. McCrimmon says, I don't think that would be the case at all. Winnipeg would be a great market for our league. I really believe that. Is there a challenge with geography? Yes, there is. Obviously, teams coming into Manitoba would be looking to play both teams, but I don't think that there would be a resistance. I can sure see at some point in time there being an appetite for the league to get to Winnipeg. Kelly McCrimmon saying that to Kirk Penton. You know, if the Brandon ownership is on board with it, and it makes sense, you can create a rivalry between the two players. I just think there is in the Winnipeg market, like you mentioned, with all the kids, all the youth hockey teams that used to go to the Manitoba Moose games. I do think that there certainly is an underserved element of the market right now that the WHL could certainly fill that void.
Right, and it's exciting. I mean, it's exciting to think that, you know, Winnipeg will get a WHL team. I'm excited about it. I don't know about in this room if you guys are excited about it, but I think, you know, it's good for hockey fans that aren't going to get to see a lot of Jets games in person, and for people that just like that brand of hockey, which I like, and I think that's exciting. That's a good thing. I mean, we're lucky to have an ownership group that's entertaining that idea.
It doesn't hurt to have, if you're Jets, it doesn't hurt to also have your brass being able to see firsthand a bunch of young players coming through town when they don't have to travel to see them. That's a small byproduct of what would happen here. But I think at the end of the day, I can't stress enough, this is a dollars and cents thing. So let's not kid ourselves.
It's not an altruistic thing. Nobody's asking them to take a bath on this just to get a WHL team. But, you know, I think it makes sense probably for the marketplace. It probably makes sense as an ownership group. And as a Winnipegger, I certainly have nothing against 5,000 more people coming down into your downtown 41 nights a year.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Good point.
Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Winnipeg Jets for the next 2 hours. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done. If you're looking for a place to watch the Jets-Flyers game, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza should be at the top of your mind as to a destination. Big screen TVs, some great pizza, and some cold drinks. What more could you want on a Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, than heading out to Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza?
coffee?
Yeah, you have coffee already.
And it's at this point, it's...
And you're only allowed salad at Carbone from now on. That's all you're allowed is a salad.
Weight loss? I could use a weight loss challenge. Where's Jordan Siwawa when I need him?
I saw him at the gym.
Huh? Guess where we didn't see you? At the gym.
You can catch me at Carbone, though. Pizza and drinks. Cold drinks and salad. Every once in a while, I'll throw in some salad.
16 games ago, at the start of the NHL regular season, we did a segment called Winnipeg Jets Over-Under. Thought that now that we are officially, the Winnipeg Jets have officially played one-third of their games, we'd be well off to go back, review our predictions, see if you want to revise your predictions, and see how we're doing with where we were with our over and under from back then.
Revisionist history, Drew, that's a... It's a slippery slope.
Well, I'm still tracking it, so if you do change your mind, I will, you know, it's not like you get to wipe the slate completely clean. You just get to maybe...
So this isn't like a Quentin Tarantino movie where we're giving our own version of history and rewriting it. I don't know what that means. But I guess what you're saying is, do we want to change our minds? Really? We're not going to rewrite it, right?
Ezzy, how many beers did you have before the show again?
Like, I see you drinking coffee, and I don't think you spiked your coffee, but I'm not sure after that last little diet.
I don't know. Richie might have put some biscotti in there. I don't know what's going on over here.
Biscotti's a cookie.
I guess that would be a good thing. Anyways, let's continue before I make a bigger fool out of myself than I already have.
Do you need a nap?
Yeah, I kind of do.
We set the Winnipeg Jets over-under for wins at 24 wins.
Yep.
Both of you gentlemen predicted that the Winnipeg Jets would be over 24 wins. So far, one-third of the way through the season, the Jets have 7 wins on pace for 21 wins. You see how I did the math there?
Well done.
Thank you. Do you want to revise your predictions for the Winnipeg Jets over under 24 wins?
No.
You're still saying that they're going to get in the next... So you're thinking the next 32 games, they're going to get at least 18 wins.
It's 2 wins on the road, Drew, are so important. Because I thought they had to get at least 5 points out of 10 on this road trip. They already have 4. I mean, if they can get a couple more, then you come back home, and eventually you're going to get a nice little homestand here. And granted, they haven't played well at home so far. But I feel like, you know, Pavlik is starting to play better hockey, which we'll discuss later. And, I mean, obviously Enstrom's out, but they haven't been hit by the injury bug otherwise. I think there's better things on the horizon. Too many players haven't done anything that I still feel comfortable with that pick.
They've done a really nice job. You know, you have to give the Jets full credit. Not full marks, full credit. Not necessarily for the way in which they have won, because yesterday's game, as Claude Noel, pardon me, Thursday night's game, as Claude Noel said.
And we'll get to that next segment.
He said it wasn't the Picasso, and it wasn't, but they won 2 points on the road. That's all that matters. And now they've, like Richie said, they've got 2 wins and 2 games here to begin this road trip. But you know what? I'm not going to change my over-under prediction either, Drew. I mean, you know, the Jets, after 16 games, 7-8-1, that's, you know, not really that bad if you think about it, considering that the losing streak they've had at home. But, you know, that's probably where they're going to end up. I still think they're going to be 6-8 points out of a playoff spot, and that's kind of where our predictions were at. So sticking with it.
We initially predicted the Winnipeg Jets to have 48 points, or we said over or under 48 points, rather. So far, through 16 games, one-third of the season, they have 15 points on pace for 45 points. Presumably, you're not revising the fact that you both picked over on the 45-point total?
Well, no, Drew, because we just said that they're going to have...
That's why I was said presumably.
Okay.
Do you just want to skip that one?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll skip that one. Evander Kane. We set the over-under at 20 goals. He's got 5 goals so far. He's on pace for 15 goals. Richie, you have him over 20 goals. Ezzy, you have him even at 20 goals. Would you like to revise either of your picks?
I'm going to stick with that, Drew. I mean, the way he just shoots a puck from everywhere, I mean, that's his game. He shoots it. And
that's how he got his goal on Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And so some of those will pop in. I think he hasn't played his best hockey as of yet, and he's still on pace for 15. So I'm going to stick with that. He would really benefit, I think, from a kind of a shuffle of the lines. Playing with Bermistrov or playing with Jokinen hasn't served him well at all. But with the little Ladd-Wheeler line going so well, I'm not sure if he'll see a switch in the near future.
or in the immediate future. Eventually, I think he will get some other chances, and you know, if he does pop on the 5-on-3s or get other opportunities, I think he's going to exceed that total.
Ezzy, you had him exactly even at 20 goals. Would you like to revise that in any manner?
Just like my BFF Richie here, I'm going to keep my prediction at the same. I'm sticking with my predictions. You know,
he's going to end up exactly at 20. You know, and you know what?
Yes.
I have no doubts whatsoever. No. He's going to end up exactly at 20 goals.
Well,
might as well just mark it down in pen right now.
That's why they call
then,
me.
Then we'll never hear the end of it.
There's a reason why they call me Ezra Damas. So I think I'm going to. You know, he's going to stick it at. He's going to get to 20 goals because he's not on a pace that is really what you'd expect him to be at after a 30-goal season. So, you know, he'll probably be right around there, and he hasn't got going on the power play. Like Richie said, he is shooting the puck a lot, and he got the goal against the Carolina Hurricanes just by putting the puck on the net, a goal that Cam Ward absolutely wanted to have back.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to increase his pace, so, you know, I'll stick with that prediction.
We set the over-under for Blake Wheeler's points at 35 points. He has 13 points so far. He's on pace for 39 points. You both predicted that he'd be over 35 points. Any revision there?
No, Drew, I'm not going to revise anything here. But I think that the point is with Wheeler is the past two games have been his two best.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of, you know, he accumulated points over the first 10, 12 games, to me, not playing very well. And now
in
I think...
In spite of himself a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, now he's getting in gear a bit. So I don't think you'd be revising that prediction.
No, I'm not. We're not revising predictions here, Drew. Just you don't have to ask the question. We'll just give our answers for why we're not. But Blake,
I tell you what, two predictions from now, you better be revising yours. Let me tell you.
No, nope.
But I'll tell you.
Not
in a
revising
second
any
one.
Of them.
Okay.
No,
well.
But Blake Wheeler against the Buffalo Sabres in that 2-1 victory on Tuesday was the best player, and he didn't have a goal, but he was our best player on the ice. And again, he had the comments before the Jets went on the road trip about the negativity. And I commend him for standing up and saying that he wasn't appreciating that. And he's gone out on this road trip, and he's really led the team with Andrew Ladd and Brian Little, that line. So, you know, he's put his money where his mouth is, and I think that means a lot.
Andrew Ladd, we set the over-under at 30 points for him. So far, he's 16 points in 16 games, on pace for a point a game, 48 points. Richie, you had him as under 30 points. Mm-hmm. And Ezzy, you had him as over 30 points. Richard, would you like to...
Look at the big brain on me, Richie.
I'm not making any revisions, Drew, but if I was smart, the smart bet would be to...
You can revise it if you want.
We don't do revisionist history here.
I mean, the predictions are stay as they were when they were made, but... Obviously, he looks like he's going to be far in excess of that total. You know what? Full credit to Andrew Ladd. He has been terrific this year, and you can't take anything away from him. He's led, he's scored goals, and he's created offense, and it's been a steadying force on a team that at times has looked lackadaisical.
Night in, night out, he's not missed a single game for the Winnipeg Jets 2.0. And you're right, Richie. Night in, night out. Best player on the ice. Getting goals every night, always engaged. So yeah, you know that I'm keeping my prediction on this one. And you know, again, I can't add much to what Richie said, but he does deserve full credit for his first third of the season.
Olli Jokinen, we set the bar for him at 35 points. He has 4 points so far and is on pace for 12 points. Richie, you said he was going to be under 35 points. Ezzy, you said he was going to be over 35 points.
That's probably my worst prediction out of the five. How many have we done? Five?
This is the sixth.
Six. Yeah. Well, I got to stick with it, but it's not looking good right now. Olli Jokinen, you know, is a guy that he was brought in to give you know, some nice leadership qualities, Richie, but he was brought in more so to give them some scoring. And you could argue that he's been the most disappointing player on the Jets. There have been a few others, but with his contract status... Pardon me, the contract that he was given is disappointing, and Olli Jokinen knows that. He knows that he's got to be better. So right now that prediction might not look good, but, you know, getting us off of that for a second, I mean, if the Jets want to make the playoffs this year, and this season is already – it's unbelievable, by the way, that we're already a third of the way through the season. But he's got to be better. Ladd, Little, Wheeler have been unbelievable on this road trip and for the whole season. They can't carry – Very few teams can rely on one line to win night in, night out.
Jokinen's been brutal. Let's just call it spade a spade. He's been brutal. He's been a bust. And they need him to be better.
Dustin Byfuglien, 30 points is where we set his over-under. He has 7 points in 11 games so far, which works out to 0.64 points per game.
Oh, you did that in your head, too.
No, I didn't. Oh. But in order to for him to get to that 30-point plateau, he needed to average 0.63 points per game in 48 games. You both had him at over. Is the injury too much for him to overcome? Or is, I mean,
there has to be an asterisk on that one.
I'm gonna stick with that one, Drew. Although I think a key is, and we'll talk about it later, is you know where he's situated on the power play in terms of how he creates points.
Yeah, I love him. I love him in front. A lot of people do too, but
I don't.
Not for. Oh, we'll have a juicy little discussion, Richie.
Juicing an orange right now.
As far as getting points, I agree. I agree with you. For points, that's not good. As far as a strategy, I like it. I was calling him the Roseau Bulldozer, but I like it. I'm going to stick.
Who were
with
you
it.
Calling him the Roseau Bulldozer to?
On Twitter.
Oh boy.
You know,
Toby Enstrom
having a good time. Huss liked it.
Toby Enstrom, 25 points is where we set his bar. Obviously, he's injured. He had 13 points in 13 games. So when he comes back, is he going to have enough time? Is he going to bounce back enough to get to 25 points? You predicted under, Richie, as you predicted over.
Well, I knew he'd get injured.
Yeah.
Did I just look at all the predictions and just go over, 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 over for all of them?
Probably.
Yeah, you know what, Drew? Enstrom's injury history, though, is a factor in that prediction, in all honesty. I mean, he had a really reliable stretch for a while there, but he's a smaller player. He had injury last year and injury again this year, and... I don't think he'll make it over that number. I mean, we don't know how much longer he's going to be out for. Still a couple weeks at least.
Yeah, you think so?
When the team says week to week.
Yeah. That means probably.
That means like 4 to 6 usually, yeah.
Andrei Pavlik, 38 games started is where we set the benchmark. He has started 13 games so far. He's on pace to start 39. You both said that he was going to be over 38 games started.
Not bad. And again, we're sticking with predictions here, so sticking with it. And, you know, Andrei Pavlik was given the big 5-year contract. Everyone remembers that, and we, you know, analyzed it on the show. You know, you got to ride him. There's nothing else you can say, and he's been playing well.
The past two games.
He's been playing well the last two games. I think he's been fairly steady the whole year.
No, he's been bad. He's been bad this year.
I wouldn't say bad.
Yeah, he's been bad. And I'd say bad.
That's your opinion.
Yeah, and I don't think that he's won them any games aside from the last. You know, you could argue that Buffalo game was kind of the first game he stood on his head and won. And if you're a team like the Jets with
this... I think the Jets have been bad as a whole, so...
I agree, but I think he's been bad.
I don't agree, but...
I think that if they don't have him playing at a high level, that they're going to have a lot of difficulty. And the past two games, he has played a lot better. And that's one of the reasons why there's success. The Jets cannot win without him playing at a high level. There's not enough talent on the squad. They're not assembled in such a way that they can win without Pavlik playing at a high level. And you can't be in the NHL, Ezzy, and be stopping pucks at less than 90% clip, as a couple days ago both Montoya and Pavlik had been doing, and expect to win. You just can't do it.
Last two that we had, and we'll just go through these ones real quick. We had Andrei Pavlik at a 20-win benchmark. He's on pace for 15 wins, but obviously the Jets' slow start is what affected that. You both had him going. You both predicted he'd be over 20 wins.
Yep.
And then the last one, Zach Bogosian, 30 games played. He's played 4 so far. He's got 32 games remaining. The Jets have 32 games remaining. If he stays healthy, he should easily surpass that 30-game total. You had him being over that, Ezzy. You had him being under that. Anyways, we will continue to recap these predictions as we go throughout the season to always look back. You know, we like to keep ourselves accountable. When we come back, we go Jets Week in Review, Sunday against Boston, Tuesday against Buffalo, and Thursday against Carolina. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my very good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Tim and producer Remus, are doing their thing behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We remind you to get your picks in for the Illegal Curve game-winning goal contest. Predict which one player, either on the Jets or the Flyers, is going to score tonight's game-winning goal. Send in that pick via Twitter to @IllegalCurve. If you pick correctly, you win some tremendous Illegal Curve merchandise.
You know, it is quite tremendous, let me tell you.
And a lunch with Drew, so nobody's going to enter.
The entries are growing rapidly by the day, Richard, and you do not, in fact, win a lunch with me, but you can win a day with Ezzy. Didn't we once do a win-a-day with Ezzy contest?
And we did.
Yeah.
Never happened as that.
I don't think so. I don't remember. Maybe.
You've got so many dates, it's hard to keep track of which ones are Ezzy made and which ones are win-a-day with Ezzy contests. Anyways, Jets week in review. All in all, a good week for the Winnipeg Jets, especially after the disappointing homestand that they wrapped up last Sunday with a loss to the Boston Bruins. So they lose Sunday to the Bruins, although it was a decent effort. They played hard, which is what most people wanted to see. And they almost tied the game right there at the end. A couple breakdowns, and that was really the difference in that game. Then they go out on the road Tuesday night. They beat the in disarray Buffalo Sabres, a game in which the Jets, the score flattered the Jets. Pardon me, flattered the Sabres. Yes. It easily could have been a 4-1, 5-1 Jets win in that contest. They pull it off. And then Thursday, after that, just the stunning news prior to the game, the Zach Redmond injury, the tragedy that was so very narrowly averted thanks to the tremendous actions of the Jets training staff and the Hurricanes training staff and coaches and players and really everyone else.
Anthony Peluso
and Perry Pern. And it was obviously so very close to being an unbelievable tragedy. The Jets are able to go out there, win like you said earlier in the show, Ezzy, not a Picasso of a hockey game, but get 2 points. They get a clean victory against a divisional opponent on their home ice. And, entering into tonight's game against this afternoon's game against the Philadelphia Flyers, it's been a very good week for the Winnipeg Jets.
The Jets are, I thought you were going to go this way, Drew, entering this afternoon's game with the Philadelphia Flyers, as the Jets are 2 points out of first place and the third seed in the Eastern Conference. I'm not sure what the tiebreakers are, but they're 2 points out of first place in their division. It's just crazy to think.
Yeah, it is. It kind of is. There's nobody that appears to be, taking the Southeast division by storm. Washington is struggling. Tampa Bay is not separating themselves. But, Richie mentioned, that for this road trip to be successful, the Jets would have to get 5 points, and I would agree with that. And 4 points already, they're off to a pretty good start. And you have to like the way, we talked about the play of Pavlik, and the injury to Zach Redmond was extremely scary. And you love to see that they came through for their teammates and won the game against the Carolina Hurricanes for their teammate, because Zach Redmond was watching that game and rooting his teammates on. But you have to like the way the defense has played without Tobias Enstrom. And, they've called up Julian Melchiori. You look at this. They've changed up the pairings. And you've got Hainsey and Bogosian playing together and Buff and Klitsam playing together. Postma Stewart. And they've played pretty well. They've played a smart game. And they've really tightened up. And, sure, they gave up the lead against the Carolina Hurricanes quickly, the Tolusti goal. But for the most part, they've been pretty consistent. And going on the road after those three losses at home, I was concerned about the team, and they've really responded well. And again, getting top production from the Ladd Little Wheeler line, you still want to see guys like Ole Jokinen and Antropov and Burmistrov find their scoring touch, but the week has been good thus far, and if they can pick up a win here in one of these games, then it's a successful road trip. It really is. You get 6 out of 10 points. That's a successful road trip.
For sure. I totally agree, Ezzy. And this team still defensively is in disarray. At times, they're just running around like chickens with their heads cut off. So there's some concern there.
If it wasn't for Andre Pavlik in that first period against Carolina, then they probably lose that game. Andre Pavlik stole that game based on his play in the first period after of that game, and then it got real sloppy and in the third period it was pond hockey, and the Jets were able to get the next goal win sort of thing.
How does the Jets defense specifically, and we'll break down the actual game itself, but today is really, how do they handle on for the next few games, how do they handle the next three teams and their forwards down low? I think that's going to be interesting to take into account. But overall, Drew, in terms of the whole week, it's a successful week. You go in, you take advantage of a Buffalo team that is obviously, as you mentioned, in disarray and subsequently fired Lindy Ruff. You beat a Carolina team in regulation who's an intra-division game, and who you're competing with for first place in the division, even though sometimes you wonder how Carolina, looking at that roster, you wonder, I mean, the division's bad, so that's why. Yeah. But
this year so far, it's back to being the Southeast division.
Yeah, and it kind of still was last year, really, Drew. I mean,
they still qualified two teams for the playoffs last year.
Yeah, I mean, but you could argue the two weakest teams in the conference.
Yeah, okay, fine.
So, overall, though, they go into Carolina. They kind of win a sloppy one. They take care of Buffalo. The Boston game, you're in it with Boston. I didn't think it was a very good game for the Jets. But as he mentioned it, they need performance from some of the guys who have been struggling, because this week, aside from Pavlik, who's turned his game around a bit, the same guys are scoring. And at some point, first of all, Andrew Ladd's not getting 82 points, not getting a point per game average, excuse me. He's just not. He's never done it in his career, and he's not going to do it. And that's not saying anything bad about Andrew Ladd.
And even if he did do it, which we don't expect him to do it, you still need the production.
Exactly. Good point. And so if Ladd's going to fall off, and some of the other guys are going to fall off in terms of their production, the other guys who haven't performed, the Jokinens and Andropovs, as he mentioned, and Burmistrov, and even, get Kane going a little bit more. He has points on the board, but he can be better, in my opinion. If you can get those guys going, get the secondary scoring, well, then you're more dangerous. But without that, you cannot compete on a night-in, night-out basis.
I'm trying to find it's a stat about the percentage of goals, and it was our colleague Adam Wozni who tweeted it out. A stat about the percentage of goals that have been scored by, the Ladd, Little, Wheeler line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an overwhelming, huge percentage. It's really been only that line that's been the one that's going.
Well, Drew, I mean, they scored 4 goals for the first time in, what was it, a month?
10 games.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. I mean, when you're not scoring more than 3 goals for 10 games, it's hard to win, hockey games. And, again, you're playing against 3 teams. You could argue that the Jets are as good or better than Buffalo and Carolina.
Yes.
You can't argue that the Jets are as good or better than the Flyers, the Devils, and the Rangers. So
no,
if the Jets can steal one of these games, I think looking at it, today's the game to steal, I think. I think if you're going to go into on the road and really make this a successful road trip, this is the game to steal, because the Flyers are the most vulnerable of the three teams.
Matt Reed is injured now, Richie. Hartnell's still out, even though he's been cleared to practice. Mezeros is not back yet. I agree, Drew. This is the most vulnerable team, and you're well-rested coming off the win, knowing that you're going to have to go, even though New Jersey's not far travel-wise. I believe, by the way, both New Jersey and Winnipeg play today, so they're both
so they're putting back-to-back.
Both back-to-back.
And actually, New Jersey has the more difficult schedule, because New Jersey's playing in Washington, I think. I don't know if it's tonight or if it's late this afternoon here. Let me double-check it. And so they'll have a longer travel back to New Jersey than the Jets, who only have the 2 hours.
I think it's a night game, Drew.
No, it's actually 12 noon.
Okay.
So 12 noon. So it starts an hour earlier than the Jets game. And so both teams will be on even footing for tomorrow's game in New Jersey. Two teams that haven't seen each other yet this year. But, go on.
Well, the Jets haven't played well against either the Devils or Rangers over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. They've played well against the Hurricanes. And, varying degrees of success against the Philadelphia Flyers. But, this is a game where you look at it, and they want this, and I think they'll be hungry. And, you get one out of – you've put yourself in a situation where you don't have to win out for it to be a successful road trip, and that's a good thing. But, Philadelphia Flyers are as we saw when they were here less than 2 weeks ago, even with that, even with their injuries, Voracek is quietly at the top of the scoring leaders, playing unbelievably. Wayne Simmonds is great. You know, you still are playing a very deep team. It's not going to be an easy game, but it's a game that they can probably win over the other two.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day, on your home for the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.